This is Eleanor Swimp, continuing an interview with Jack Havard on October 26, 1991. Okay, so your next interview.
We were asked by
New Jersey Zinc Company
to investigate a proposed zinc refinery to be built in Ireland. Our job was to develop the economics of the project and to find a location for the plant. So this meant some trips to Ireland some low-flying around the island and investigation of various sites. And we were successful in finding a very fine site on the Shannon River. I got that part of the work done all right, and then developed the economics, which were reasonably good. But the job never went ahead because the zinc market developed problems, and they couldn't justify building a new facility. By this time, I'd moved up to two bigger jobs were in fact, we had moved to Nevada City, and I was commuting, spending from anywhere from 2 to 4 days a week doing consulting work for the Kaiser Engineers. I was asked to come in and run a crash program to produce a proposal for a $1 billion+ job in Colombia, developing a new coal field for Exxon and the Colombian government. Our competition on this one was Morrison Knudsen. This took a real burst of energy to produce, I think, six volume report on every aspect of the project. Amount of work that I felt was absolutely excessive, but was typical of Exxon's request for proposals. So we got that job done, and it was a very, very close decision. We understood, and we lost it. The politics went against us, and we lost it to Morrison Knudsen. It was built, and it's in operation. And then the company had been doing, Kaiser Engineers had been accomplishing a lot of work for U.S. Borax on their huge low-grade molybdenum deposit near Ketchikan, Alaska, in a very sensitive area, but on claims that had been long owned and on a plan which would have absolutely minimized any environmental effects. It was to be a very large, low-grade operation, and again, we carried the engineering all the way to the point of the detailed design.
I think this is the one they call Quartz Hill, is it?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Of course. And they had some problems in putting this report together. It was very large, complicated report, and I was asked to come down and manage the production of the report, which I did. And I think that was the last of the work I did for Kaiser Engineers.
That project also never went.
Has never
because
gone.
Of the environmental and, opposition. Must be terribly disappointing to work for years on something like that, and then
of course it's still there. It's still owned by U.S. Forests.
Mm-hmm.
Every effort was made to hide it so it couldn't even be seen by anybody in a boat, you know, mm-hmm. unless they went right to the point where the molybdenum concentrates were going to be loaded on one of these little fjords. But it was not going to harm the environment, and the literature from the Sierra Club was just full of outright lies. In fact, I wrote to the club, told them that they were lying about mm-hmm. the project. Of course, never got even an answer from them.
No.
Meanwhile, up at retirement at our place in Nevada City, near Nevada City, I began to develop my own consulting business. One of the first jobs I had was for Southern California Edison Company to appraise a group of coal mines in Utah that were possibly available for sale, big operating mines. And I think I probably should keep the name of the owner confidential, but I did go down and go into these mines and go over the country and make a report to Southern California Edison, which they accepted it as a satisfactory report. I began to get small jobs in and around in the gold industry in the far west, which I hadn't been involved in. When I was at Kaiser Engineers, there was no work in the gold industry because the price was being held down, and so we never did a tap of work in the gold industry that I can recall. But I began to get called upon to do some work. My people knew my background, and of course you can learn that pretty fast if you've been exposed to all these other things. So I examined them quite a few proposed projects in gold. The most successful one was being called upon by a potential investor in the Pinson project in northern Nevada, and he been asked to become a participant, owning stock for the Pinson project, and there was nothing to see in the field. Mm-hmm. I'd been in the country before, and all you would see is a sagebrush desert with a few drill hole markers sticking out. Mm-hmm. So there was no point in going to the field, so I went to the office of John Livermore, a noted geologist and entrepreneur, in Reno, who was deeply involved in the project and had been responsible for obtaining a whole series of consulting reports, which I went over very carefully, and I arrived at the conclusion that it was an excellent project, and I wrote a short report, and then took it down to this client in San Francisco, and told him verbally that I not only thought he should invest in it, but he should try to get a larger piece if he could. And the project turned out to be phenomenally successful. Mm-hmm. And it's still in operation, but on lower grade ore than they started with. But all the people that had stock in that company succeeded very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only really positive piece of gold mine investigation I ever did. Usually I turn them down.
Now, when you go to somebody like Livermore and ask to see his reports, is this a touchy matter?
No, because they knew that this man had been asked to investigate, and I had full cooperation.
Good.
And the reports had been done by leading people in every field. It was first-class work, and there wasn't any question in my mind, but it would be successful. I said the only thing that can inhibit the complete success of this mine would be a failure of management, bad management.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to be an excellent mine.
Now, when you do something like that, can you get in? Can you invest in it also?
Well, I never do. No, I don't think you can mix consulting work and investment. At least I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ask because this is, some people do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In fact, well, you used to be expected to, I guess, a long time ago. It was
yes, yeah. Took a part of it as part of the job.
Uh-huh. You don't think it's a good idea, though?
No. The last big consulting job I did, large in scope, I got through a friend of mine who was a consulting, Hal McVeigh, who was an outstanding consultant in the industrial minerals field. And he had been doing some work for a company that in partnership with MIM of Australia, one of the big Australian mining companies, had accomplished a lot of exploration work on a nickel, cobalt, chromium deposit in Papua New Guinea. And Bechtel had done a lot of work for them, but they wanted to get a second opinion, and McVeigh recommended me, and I was hired to look at the situation, including all of the Bechtel reports and a field trip to the site in Papua New Guinea,
mm-hmm.
which of course was very interesting because this deposit was up in the mountains and accessible only by the native trails or by helicopter. Naturally, we chose the helicopter. Yeah. And I wrote a report that took a different approach to the deposit in the Bechtel report. And I think it was an interesting and worthwhile approach. I talked to the Bechtel people first before I went over there, and we had a very good relationship. They were interested in the kind of thing I was talking about too. And so there was no problem there, but...
What was the difference?
Well, the difference was that they had planned to mine the ore up in the low mountains at about 3,000 feet above sea level, build a big road and transport the ore in huge trucks down to the coast to the refinery, which would extract the nickel, cobalt, and chromium from this ore. And my approach was that we should grind the ore up at the quarry and put it in a pipeline and transported by pipe.
That would be
down to a
wet slurry?
Slurry form, you know. Had to go into slurry form anyway. To the coast. And there were some other differences in mining methods and whatnot, but that was the major difference. And actually, I wrote the report, or the draft of the report, before I visited the plant using all the available information, which was considerable, or before I visited the deposit. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was a very interesting trip,
sure.
Hopping around with a helicopter in the jungle and landing in little clearings where they had been doing some exploration work. I came to respect the native Papua New Guineans, and I was amazed at their facility with language, because there are several hundred languages in Papua New Guinea. Every village is separate, because they were all separated by mountains, and they were in little valleys. You know? But their ability to handle languages was amazing. Including learning English.
Mm-hmm. You
know. But anyway, again, the total economics of the industry were such that there was no chance to go ahead with the program, which would have cost a full $1 billion to put into operation. On the way back, I made a report to the MIM people in Brisbane. And incidentally, was able to go out to Ipswich and see the Ipswich Grammar School in the town in which my father was born.
Well.
That trip, yeah, which is very nice.
So did that never went through?
No, it's still lying there and waiting for the economics to catch up with
this
it.
This was just the economics.
Yeah, the whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
Supply and economics to make it possible, because the ore is there.
Mm.
I think the final job I should talk about in the way of my own consulting work is some work I have accomplished for the Empire Mine State Historic Park.
Before we do that, I had disposal of nuclear waste here.
Oh, that's way back. Wonder how long.
I got it out of line then.
Well, I don't know if that really adds much to the story, but while I was a consultant for Kaiser Engineers, I became involved in many meetings the question of the disposal of nuclear waste, we were in partnership with Parsons Brinker off Quaid and Douglas of San Francisco on this job, which I think they had sold themselves to the government agencies, and we were brought in for our mining expertise. And I sat through many meetings, and I thought the problem was solved, but this was 15 years ago, and we haven't yet made any move to.
What did you think the solution would be?
Well, it was we were looking at disposing of the waste at an underground mine at a depth of 3,000 feet, using stainless steel capsules with all this material, and taking all the proper precautions of automatic handling and everything. But the politics are such that it just isn't getting done. As you're well aware, we haven't got a purifier yet.
Dang. Where would you have put it?
Well, the place that we were looking at that time was in the great basalt lava fields around Hanford, Washington, where the already is a nuclear facility.
You thought that would be the answer.
Mm-hmm. But I can't say that, Mark, but I think we got on that just sort of talking about the problem, and I didn't make any worthwhile contribution to those meetings. I can remember.
Well, you wanted to talk about what you're doing for Empire. Why did you choose Nevada City? Why'd you go all the way up there?
Well, we were living in Oakland, and in a house that we were very fond of, but we decided that was not the place to retire, and we wanted to get more of a country retirement situation. So on weekends we began scouting. We scouted the Napa Valley, for instance, and then we began going up and down the foothill country. And I wanted to get within reasonable driving distance of an airport because I thought I'd be doing some consulting work. And so we drew some radiuses from the Sacramento airport. And we were very unsuccessful. We made trip after trip up and down the Sierra foothills. We came into Nevada City for the first time, and we liked the area very much. Talked to real estate people, and we just didn't get anywhere with them. And I guess it must have been 6 months later that we doubled back onto Nevada City and met a real estate man at 5 o'clock in the evening. He was closing up. We told him what we were running for. We wanted to have a view, and we wanted to be out in the country, but we wanted to be close to town, and we wanted to be in nature, but we wanted power and telephone. All these contradictions.
Sure.
And he said, well, I'm going to take my book home tonight. You come back at 9 o'clock in the morning. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, he drove us out to our present home, and we said, we'll take it.
It was already built.
It was already built, but it had a rather small living room, and we could see that with the gable type living room that we could extend it very easily, which we did, and it made the house
gorgeous.
So we've been we were very happy there. I became deeply involved with the community and our Episcopal Church. So it met our requirements superbly. We were very fortunate to find it. Well, getting back to the last job I'll talk about is the people in charge of the Empire Mine Historic Park, along with people from the Chamber of Commerce, decided that the visitors to the park should get more of an underground experience. They can walk around the park now and they see some very interesting things, including the so-called Bourne Cottage and its beautiful grounds. But all they get underground is that they can go about 40 feet down the main shaft. So they tried different ideas. One idea was to sink a shaft, but they talked to a mine entrepreneur named Tim Calloway, whom I had done a great deal of consulting for and looking at gold properties for him. And he said, why don't you drive an adit? And people then could ride in a train, go underground in the adit. You'd give them a real underground experience. There wasn't any opening that left in the old mine that was safe that you could use for that purpose. And they asked him who could help, and he gave them my name. And so I went out and looked at the thing, and I developed a total plan for an adit that would intersect the shaft and for a visitor's building and the use of a regular man-trip train with a storage battery locomotive and a program that would really give people an underground experience. We'd put hard hats on them and slickers on them and put them on the man-trip train and take them back in to the intersection of the main shaft, and this would be a great experience. And I worked on that to the point where my drawings are ready for detailed design. And the project has been carried on. Detailed design was approved by the state, but now the state has no capital funds. So the whole project's in abeyance, and we still meet with Chamber of Commerce people and other interested people to see if there's any way that we can get financing through the mining companies or otherwise to get this job done. But I think it's going to be a long time before the money can be raised to do it. Meanwhile,
it'll go eventually, though, don't you think?
Well, I hope so. It will be.
Sounds like
such a
natural. It
would really add to that.
It would.
And of course, the Chamber of Commerce is enthusiastic about it, and the Friends of the Empire Mine are enthusiastic about it. It was a very interesting little job. Mm-hmm.
Lots of wonderful people up there, aren't there?
Yeah. That's the end of the story.
Not quite.
No?
But a little bit more. I want to ask you some questions. Mm-hmm. You haven't talked about your last category here. The Western Advisory Council and the SME. And
oh, my.
Yeah,
oh my.
There's still some story to tell.
Oh, yes.
Let me just, I'll reverse the tape. Okay, all right.
This is a story of my relationship with the Society of Mining Engineers. as soon as I was out of college, I joined the society as a junior member. And it was at the Southern Oklahoma plant. And of course, the publications became my source of knowledge and a way of keeping up to date on the industry while I was in a very isolated location from that standpoint. You know. And I always maintained an interest in the society and membership and went to meetings when I could, many of the places didn't permit very easy attendance to these meetings. But when I, and occasionally I would give talks on some subject at meetings. But when I joined Kaiser Engineers, not only was there an opportunity to become more active, but there was encouragement from the organization to become more active because part of the game is to know people and to know what's going on. So I was then became a regular member of the San Francisco section, and I have always been interested in serving if I could. As a matter of fact, when I was with U.S. Gypsum as chief engineer of mines, I was involved with the, I think I was program manager one time for the cement, lime, and gypsum division of the SME. And with Kaiser Engineers, I became more and more involved until I was chairman of the Industrial Minerals Division. And then a few years later, I became president of SME in 1976. And
what did that involve?
Well, this, of course, involved a year of working with the executive director and running the meetings of the board and
lots of travel,
making some speeches around in different places. You know.
Your company really has to give you full support for this, don't
they? Well, they did, because and it was very useful.
Mm-hmm.
I not only enjoyed it personally, but it developed the most activity on the part of Kaiser Engineers that they'd ever had in the SME.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I went on to do many, many tasks for them, some of them after I retired. I was appointed a Henry Crum lecturer, mm-hmm. and developed a couple lectures which I gave around the United States one year.
What were the topics of the...
Well, I had two topics. One topic was entitled Stories of Lost Mines. And these were, I think I had seven stories of mines that were lost economically, not geographically.
Mm-hmm.
And
this wasn't the Superstition Mountains kind of thing.
No. It started off with the first mine I worked on in Rimini, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The efforts to develop that deposit and failure to do so. carried on through a lot of other experiences that I'd had, and it was all done with slides. I mm-hmm. talked while I was showing slides and it was pretty well received.
Sure.
In fact, I think I gave 10 lectures, which is more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
I had another program on satellite imagery. I had become a director of the GEOSAT committee, which was a committee formed by mining and oil companies to promote the use of the Landsat images, which were just then becoming available. This was new. And
was this a committee of AIME?
No, I had no relationship to AIME.
I see.
Other than friendship and some
I see.
Talks that were given, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But it was a separate committee. And I became a director of this was a national committee. And the actual president was Dr. Henderson, who had his PhD in geology and was very capable at this task. And that took quite a bit of time and was quite interesting. But as a result of all that, I had a talk prepared on the use of satellite imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And only one AIME section asked for it, and that was the Cleveland section, which are mostly members for some strange reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave that talk just once there. All the other talks were this. Talks on the lost mines. I chaired a committee to develop accepted definitions of ore. Worked with Armin Bainfield, who was then president of Barry Dolbear and Company, a leading mining consulting firm in New York, and he and I worked together in developing these definitions, which were approved by three professional societies. And that was an interesting little piece of extracurricular work.
Mm-hmm.
Then the SME decided to build a new headquarters building near Denver. They pulled out of New York, which was the original headquarters of SME. And of course, SME had been growing very rapidly. AIME, the parent organization, stayed in New York, but SME moved first to Salt Lake City, where they were in lease quarters, and that wasn't very successful. So the research was put on a committee for a new site, and the site was chosen near Denver.
Littleton.
And
you were on that committee?
I wasn't on that committee, but I was asked to chair the construction committee.
Oh, I see.
For the new headquarters. And I said, I'll chair it as long as I'm the committee. I didn't want a bunch of people trying to do that. We hired the architects instructors.
I've been there. It's a lovely building.
Well, I was deeply involved in that, the original concept. And
very nice.
For my work on that, I was given the first President's Award. I got a nice plaque hanging up on the wall for my work on that one. And then, a little later than that, I was asked to be chairman of a long-range planning committee for SMB. And we had to put together a first-class committee, and we did it, and we had a prolonged job, and I think it was a successful job in accomplishing long-range planning for SME, and many of our recommendations have been put into effect. Mm-hmm. So, I became really very active in that organization, and it was very rewarding.
You've received a lot of awards from all these organizations.
Well, yes, and I got a
Hardinge Award.
I got the Hardinge Award for some of the pioneering work I'd done on gypsum in the West, as well as work on other industrial minerals.
Hmm.
But
that's usually sort of metallurgy, isn't it?
Well, it's an industrial minerals reward.
Uh-huh.
It's an AIME industrial minerals award.
Let's see.
And I got it. Some of the usual things you get. I was a distinguished member of SME. Mm-hmm. That sort of comes with being president. And, let's see what else happened. Oh, I had one very interesting development was that when the Sputnik days were on, educators were giving their attention to high technology, competition with the Russians and so on. Mining began to be looked at as rather plebeian kind of an occupation. And many universities dropped their courses in mining engineering,
mm-hmm.
including the University of Washington, Washington State, and the University of California, Berkeley, where mining had really been a tradition, you know. They kept the metallurgy, but they dropped the mining. And I began thinking about this, that there wasn't a mining school on the Pacific Coast. You know, the nearest one was the Mackey School of Mines in Reno. And I got to thinking about the Hearst Mining Building and the tradition at Berkeley. And I talked to Doug Forstenauer, who is, you know, premier metallurgy, the metallurgy is that, you know, I'm very well.
Right.
And I said to Doug, I think that another look should be taken at mining engineering in Berkeley. Well, he thought that was interesting, and so he got a hold of the dean of the College of Engineering. And we had lunch at the Kaiser Center one day. And I presented to the dean my ideas that the time had come to reestablish mining engineering at Berkeley. And of course, we were very busy then, and this was when the height of our activity, and everything seemed to be growing and really opportunity. And
that I felt that there was a real place for high-tech modern mining engineering which could be provided by a place like Berkeley. Well, the dean accepted the idea.
Do you remember who the dean was?
Well, he was Chinese, and I can't think of his name. It was a kind of a name like Chad or something like that. An awfully nice, bright man, as you would expect. But the result of the whole thing was that they did reform and establish a mining engineering department. They brought in a top-notch professors who were mining engineers, primarily from South Africa and England. Mm-hmm. And they were still there. The operation, I think, has been very successful. Although the slump in the 80s didn't help them at all. But they established a very good department and done some interesting work. So, well, as a result of that,
excuse me, did you have to do anything more than just buy the lunch to get this going?
That's all
he did.
That's all I did.
And they just.
They were able to.
With that, they were able to.
Good. Well, that, of course, was very helpful. I mean, he was also very interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of it all. So, he was responsible, I think, for migrating. Made an honorary president of California. The California Mining Association. Always meant that I would give a speech on about a year
I'm I'm going to go to the next one.
Thank you.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Even though I were good friends and ways to meet, I was sick of it in San Francisco and I was referring to it. And he knew something of my background and he recommended me for them. Thank you. Let's do it.